So you've been up since when because of your coffee?
Actually, God, you know, at dinner last night, and I had that decaf cappuccino after the meal. I don't think it was decaf.
Oh, yeah.
God, I tossed and turned. It was very frustrating. And then you start doing the math.
Right.
Like, good Lord, that's five. I only have 5.5 hours left. And then it's like, now it's less than 5 hours of sleep. So, yeah, a little tough to get started here, but.
All right, let's hit this button, get this thing started.
Welcome to the Dumb Question Podcast, the podcast for trainers in the life sciences industry, a place where we meet training and development professionals and explore topics that might illuminate your perspective. And now, two industry professionals who never tire of the sound of their own voices, Matthew Yesko and Brian Land.
Welcome to the Dumb Question Podcast. This is Matthew Yesko, and I'm joined here by my partner,
Brian Lange.
Thank you, Brian. Welcome. And the concept of this show is that the axiom is there is no such thing as a dumb question, except the one that goes unasked. And as sales trainers, as professionals in the training industry, there are a lot of questions that go unasked by ourselves and by our peers. And I don't know if it's an embarrassment. People don't want to ask the question. So the idea is we're going to ask the dumb question for you and answer it.
Yeah, there's a lot of pressure, I think, in the room, and people are judging and assessing. So, yeah, some of those questions that seem fairly, you know, you'll hear the question like, well, that doesn't seem dumb. But then you look at the environment and you understand sometimes why people hold back.
Absolutely. And each show has a theme. And our theme for this episode is, how do you learn to become a sales trainer? And specifically, we're going to focus on once you've been hired as a sales trainer and you've got the title, and you've been promoted most often out of the field, and now you're learning how to be a sales trainer. And Brian, my question to you, the dumb question is, how do you learn to become a sales trainer?
Well, I think probably when someone gets tapped to be a sales trainer, there's a mixture of emotions, right? You're excited and enthusiastic. And I see that most people are excited about leveraging their success, right? And being able to share that with others and to help them improve their performance. So that's all very exciting. But then you're like, wait, now I have to figure out how to transition those skills, you know, that I had in the field into the classroom. And yeah, it's a tough journey. It's not a smoothly charted, you know, way. And I think a lot of employers handle that transition differently. Some manage it and are involved right from the get-go and really work hard to make sure their people have the best chance of success. But probably more often than not, it's really left to the initiative and ingenuity of the individual to get what they need in order to really excel in that role.
It's really about them having to go out and find the skills themselves.
Some, quite often, yep. And the good news is, I mean, there are a ton of resources out there.
Any resources you would recommend?
Well, obviously you can start with the bookstore. You know, there's some pretty decent books on training and being in front of a room. A lot of organizations have kind of field trainers. And in fact, a lot of people who become sales trainers have the opportunity to serve as field trainers. So sometimes they have some indication. Again, some companies run programs where they develop their field trainers, and then they have programs that develop their trainers. So yeah, the organizations are out there.
So, Brian, how did you learn to become a sales trainer?
I had a mentor. I watched a gentleman by the name of Bud Upshaw run a three-day leadership development workshop in Chicago. He used no notes, and he held the audience in the palm of his hand. And we were a small group. I think there were maybe 10 of us. And I marveled at how he could do that. And that gentleman has been, you know, my mentor for over 20 years. Love the man. He's retired. He's still writing. He actually just sent me a leadership article that he wrote. And he's got so much going on up in his noggin there that and I think he needs to pull more of that stuff out and share it with others.
So, and it's funny, Brian, I think that where people learn how to become a sales trainer, first off, I agree with you. You got to take courses. I think the only two ways that I have learned is, unfortunately, by stumbling through and making mistakes. But I think that delivery is a key part of this. I think that design is a key part of that, both of which you've touched on. I think the other parts about learning how to be a trainer that probably go underappreciated, but maybe some of the biggest pain points when someone first comes in to become a trainer is, first off, project management. Traditionally, people are salespeople, and they have some limited exposure to what project management means, how to set timelines, how to get stakeholder buy-in of a large group, how to continuously communicate throughout the process.
Understanding how many hands are in the cookie jar.
Absolutely. And then the second piece of that is working through the medical, legal, PRC process. The things that tripped me up more than anything were project management and working through review processes. And I don't know if there's a way to learn how to do that. I don't think that there is a course for those. I think
No, you're exactly right. That's something you learn sort of on the side. And I would say if I were a new sales trainer at a company, I would find people and I would grill them about, talk to me about the PRC process. How do you make it work? And there's some politics involved. There's definitely relationship building involved. There's understanding what are the red flags or things that are going to stick out for them so that you learn them. So yeah, it's a whole other side, but I wouldn't want that to hold someone back or lessen their enthusiasm. But it is absolutely a realistic part of the job. You know, we were talking about how do you set out as a sales trainer? A word that kept popping into my mind was instinct. If you try to rely on your instinct on how to be a great sales trainer, you'll probably go off track. And I don't know how many professional areas there are where that's the case. Usually your instinct is your friend and it helps guide you. But I know for me, you know, my instinct would be about, well, it's about how I deliver. It's about my gestures and how dynamic I am in front of the group or how great my stories are. But the longer you do this, you realize, wow, it's actually, as you use this phrase, you know, it's not about me. It's about the audience. So my instinct might be, I've got to be the one that needs to explain this concept in detail. Or the big one is when people do reviews, right? 9 times out of 10, the trainer does the review. All right, so to recap, we've covered this, 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 and this, and they show. And I always think, you already know the information. Why are you, there's no value created when you do the review. So again, the instinct is, let me summarize and articulate this, but then you learn, well, that instinct might be wrong. So maybe that's the first, I don't know, lesson. Challenge your instincts or verify, right? Verify your instincts with someone else who has more experience to see if you're on the right track.
Trust, but verify.
Yeah, exactly.
I think the other interesting thing is enthusiasm. And I think that, you know, someone once asked me, how do I hire for a sales training position? Because they were hiring for a manager of sales training position. And I said, just ask people why they want to get into sales training and then ask them their thoughts and see if anyone is truly enthusiastic about training others. And I swear that we have been able to identify more what we refer to as TFLs or trainers for life as just people that have a true enthusiasm for training. Like they intuitively know that they really enjoy training others. And because with that comes a natural humility that comes with that. There is a natural humility that comes out of being a teacher where you can't know all the answers. You're going to learn a lot from the learners themselves. If you're asking the dumb question of yourself and not asking other people, how do I become a sales trainer? Like, how do I really do this? I think you're already in the right spot.
So you bring up a really interesting point and one that I have a lot of passion around. So when I train trainers, one of the things that I talk about is that training is often considered, you know, that rotational promotion. And sort of back in the day, I can think of one of our clients where you had to come in-house and do 2 rotations. And that was usually either through training or through marketing. And then you could go out and become a sales manager. And so what I started to see was a lot of people that would view training as this, you know, stepping stone, this temporary thing. So I like your TFL concept because I remember people would say, but gosh, Brian, I really kind of like this. Can I do this? And I have to say, there wasn't a career track back then. It was just weird, this assumption. It's funny. You do it for 2 years. Guess what? You've probably just gotten decent at being a trainer at that point. And then you're gone, you're out in the field, you know, and then we bring in new people. So I would tell my audiences, you know, if you like training and you're connected to that and the idea of helping people and helping the organization move forward and evolve and change and all that good stuff, you might want to stay.
Well, and on the flip side, if you're not a TFL, if you are one of those people where, listen, quite honestly, training is purgatory for promotion. I still feel like the skills of delivering content, designing information so that it can be retained, managing long-term projects working with others, stakeholders within the organization are going to serve you. And quite honestly, some of those skills may not serve you one-to-one in your next role as a frontline manager, but as you move up through the organization, a lot of people say, hey, I learned this as a sales trainer.
Listen, agree or disagree, the role of being a trainer is the absolute best preparation for being a future leader in other areas of the company.
Well, I agree, because it's probably the one place where you have the least amount of authority, but the most amount of visibility.
And accountability.
And accountability, where you are basically trying to MacGyver your way through the business world. You have to try to create things that are impactful with, most often, a more limited budget, more limited time, more limited resources, with everyone telling you what to do. And you have to make a lot of different people happy, and it's all on you. And it's an excellent proving ground. It really is an excellent proving ground. It is hard work, and I have never been more exhausted than a week after I have been in front of a classroom all week.
Oh, agree, because you're on.
Yeah.
I mean, how many jobs are there where you're, particularly when you're, you know, facilitating and doing that for the week, where you have to literally be on all the time?
Cool. So now we're going to move on to the next segment of the podcast, which is what we are referring to as the pop-up interview. And the idea behind the pop-up interview is that we're going to call a sales trainer with limited information about what the podcast is about and just ask them the question of the day. We want their immediate response. And we have selected someone based on their relationship with Brian Lange. And so, Brian, would you mind telling us a little bit about our guest for today?
Yes. So I reached out to a gentleman by the name of Joe Penna, and he is a fairly big mucky muck with a major pharmaceutical company.
You know, in interest of making sure that we make attorneys and everyone else happy, we're not going to be mentioning any company names or any specific names of organizations for people that they work with today. All of the information that Joe shares is of his own opinion. And again, he wasn't prepped for this, so you're getting an immediate reaction. Without any further ado, we're going to call Joe.
Hey, thanks, Joe. I appreciate you picking up the phone this morning.
Well, I'm honored and flattered.
We are hoping that this reaches an audience of a dozen and spreads Joe's name throughout that dozen people.
So you have a bigger family than I thought.
Yeah. So the idea of this podcast is that each episode, we're going to ask a dumb question. And the dumb question being a question that never gets asked. And it's a lot of questions that sales trainers, especially new sales trainers, don't ask. Or that's they feel like it would be too dumb of a question to ask, so we're going to ask it for them. And so part of this episode is what we're going to call the pop-up interview, that each episode we're going to call somebody with limited amounts of information about what's going to happen ahead of time and ask them the question of the day. You're our very first interviewee, and the pop-up question is for today, how do you learn to become a sales trainer?
You know, I can look at it from two ways. You know, I can look at it from my own recruitment, but then I can look at it from the recruitment of my folks. So, I mean, I'll take my own recruitment because it was a little bit more unorthodox. When I say unorthodox, number one, I had limited sales experience because prior to even joining pharmaceuticals, I was a bartender. So if you think about the resume that I presented during that time, it wasn't the resume of a sales trainer. It wasn't, certainly wasn't the resume of a salesperson, but somebody gave me a shot. And then I think the enthusiasm that I had is what attracted them to ultimately recruit me and interview me and take a chance on me. So being a sales trainer, you know, going in, you think you know what goes on, but, you know, it's just, oh, okay, so once a quarter you just pop up and, you know, you run these meetings. You have no idea what goes on behind the scenes. So I was in for a very rigorous boot camp and rude awakening. But, you know, what the organization did for me in order to help me become a sales trainer was put me through that rigorous boot camp. So I got a very hands-on feel, but, you know, in terms of my skill development, they were very thoughtful in providing immersion for me, you know, programs that could help me develop my presence in front of a room, facilitation skills, mastering chart padding, executive engagement, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, I think it was a combination of, you know, understanding the role through following somebody and then, you know, looking at the competencies and skills of the individual and then helping me develop those skills while enrolled.
What do you think was the biggest surprise for you, knowing that you came with that resume to begin with as you were learning how to become a sales trainer?
I think the biggest surprise for me was all the work that went into a two-week class. You know, there's probably 40, 80 hours worth of work that goes into the development of a sales training program. A lot of the content remains the same because you have the core curriculum that you use, but, you know, based on feedback that you get from the classes, you want to pressure test the curriculum and then change it. So after a two-week class, that following Monday, the real work begins.
So, Joe, you had an unconventional resume right before you headed down the sales training path. And I know that you've been in learning and development now for several years, and you're hiring people for your team. What do you look for when you're hiring?
Yeah, there are a few things that I look for. Integrity is a very big one for me. But, you know, in terms of the learning and development, I look for somebody that's enthusiastic, somebody that has professional curiosity. And what I mean by that is we can provide you with the background information, but, you know, I want you to dig deeper and I don't want to ask you to dig deeper. You know, my expectation is of the individual that they're going to be curious to stay current and abreast of the marketplace, the disease state, and all of the evolution of all that. You know, and then the other is just learning agility, because no longer do we just own one single brand and one single disease state. We're cross-training our folks to support one another as one piece. But then the other piece is it just broadens their development, you know, and it makes them more valuable to the organization.
So I know that you have a love for training at this point in your career. Can you give us a tiny bit of insight? What is it you love about training?
I love to see the aha moment. You know, everybody coming into a class has that Everest. And I love to see it when that knowledge transfer sort of happens and that aha moment sort of happens for each individual. And it's different for everybody. And it happens throughout the week or 2 weeks. I think that's the most satisfying piece for me.
Well, Joe, we really appreciate you taking a few moments to visit with us. And for our listeners, I can share that Joe Penna is well-known in the industry, and I've known him, obviously, for a long time. Great guy. He's with a major pharmaceutical company. And for keeping the lawyers happy, we're just going to keep names out of it. And I think for the lawyers, we should probably also add Joe Penna was on expressing his own personal beliefs and not necessarily those of his employer. Thanks very much, Joe, for giving us some time this morning.
Well, thank you. And I wish you luck with the podcast, and I look forward to be a follower.
Awesome. Thank you. I love the pop-up interview. I think we get tremendous insights from other professionals in our industry.
Yeah, it's fun.
Having done the pop-up interview, we're now going to move to our review. And Brian and I have committed each podcast episode to provide some insight into an app, a service, an organization, a book that has helped us as trainers. And I'm going to start with the obvious choice for the first podcast, which is L10.
Great choice.
It's a fabulous organization. Just so you know, we are not endorsed by, we are not paid for by any of the groups that we will review or any of the services that we will review. I know you have an association with L10 that we can talk about. But for those of you that don't know, L10 is the Life Sciences Trainers and Educators Network. You can find them at L-TEN.org. And really, quite honestly, it's an organization for us, life science trainers. I am a proud graduate of Prime Time for Trainers, which was recommended to me when I went into training back in the day, just after they invented dirt. I think L10 came after that. And then, except then it was called SPBT. And it was recommended to me to attend a class that was actually taught by you, Brian, which is how we began our association. Mm-hmm. And I was first a student of yours. And I tell you, at that point in time, and again, I know the Prime Time coursework has evolved over time and changed since when I was there. But that was really my first introduction to, I met other trainers, some of whom I'm still in contact with today. So I created a peer group.
Wow.
I learned a little bit about what a sales trainer does. I had a chance to talk about common concerns and issues. I learned a lot about training delivery. I learned a little bit about instructional design. I got honest feedback. And so, you know, I'm going to give L10 an A+ as an organization for us. And again, I know you are an instructor, and maybe you want to talk a little bit about your association so people understand that you have a deep passion for L10 as well.
Well, the funny thing is our company, Parham Consulting, is an organizational development consulting firm, and we specialize in teaching influence. And along the way, one of our clients said, boy, we really like your workshops. The participants seem to like it. And so then we were asked, could we train trainers in how to facilitate? And that's what got us connected to L10, or as you said back in the, at that point, it was SPBT, the Society of Pharmaceutical and Biotech Trainers. And it's been a great partnership. We've had a chance to, I think, make a nice impact on the industry.
Cool. So that is our review for this podcast. And we're going to move on to the next section of the podcast, which is the Tell Me a Story. So Brian, what do you think the worst mistake is you ever made as a trainer?
What pops to mind, I'll have an intention of using a particular word, and then I'll inadvertently substitute something that isn't the right word. And the example I remember is I was using the phrase, you know, that you have to have a keyword. And instead of keyword, I actually said, you need to have a safe word.
Wow.
Which has a completely different meaning.
Very different from an audience participation standpoint.
So, yeah, that would be high on my list. How about for you, Matthew? You've done quite a bit of facilitation over the years.
Oh, biggest mistake I've ever made. I mean, it's not funny, but it's just bowling over people trying to get something done. I mean, it's number one thing. I've probably made enemies that still probably won't talk to me to this day because of how I treated them because I was trying to get something done.
So that begs the question for the trainers that are listening to this. What tips or advice do you have about how to interact with the support people, the people who are behind us that let us, you know, be successful in, with our training classes?
Oh, there are no people who are unimportant to your career. And thankfully, I was able to earn back some trust and make friends and win back some of their respect. But, you know, it's always harder to do that after you've started off on the wrong foot. And, you know, I was in there, I was a young gun, I wanted to make a name for myself. And despite all of my coaching and training, when push came to shove, I'm a driver and I wanted to get something done. And looking back at my career, that's probably the part of my career where I learned the most, which of course means it was the most painful. So now it's time for the mini question, which will end each podcast. Brian is going to have less than 2 minutes to answer this question. It's going to be a question most often that has some sort of personal aspect to it. So you get to know us a little bit better. And Brian, here's the question. You have a sales training class of one. The participant is your 18-year-old son. What does he need to learn about being a salesperson?
Develop your listening skills. It's funny, we think about selling and we think, oh, that's about talking and explaining and convincing and all that. But it's really, it's about listening. I would say the entry ticket is know your product or service backwards and forwards. Learn more than you need to know to sell. Whatever your space that you're in, whether you're selling into architecture and engineering firms or you're selling, you know, pharmaceuticals or whatever, know that space beyond just where your product or service fits. And take a genuine interest in others.
That is all we have for you today on the podcast. Now, I do want to say, if you are interested in either being a featured guest or asking a dumb question, please, please, please reach out to us. You can reach me. I'm Matthew Yesko, the Chief Learning Architect at Aquinas Leadership Group. My email is myesko@ Aquinas LG, which is AQUINASLG.com. You can also find my thoughts on the blog under Aquinas Anecdotes at AquinasLG.com, which would be, again, AQUINASLG.com.
And I'm Brian Lange with Parham Consulting. Parham is a contraction of the words performance improvement. You can learn more about us at Parham.com. PERIM.com, and occasional tweets about resources and insights can be found at Brian P. Lange, B-R-I-A-N, P as in Patrick, L-A-N-G-E.
Many thanks to our guest on today's program. We'd like to thank Joe Penna for being a guest on this program. We'd like to thank the voice of the podcast, Mean Tina Green, and our executive producer, Tim Haggerty.